Lamed Tes Samin Aleph. So if you remember, we did the Mishnah yesterday, and the Mishnah was focused on the contrast between Ones and Mefata. The basic differences are, number one, in the Tashlumin, where the Mefata is potter from Tsar, the Ones is Chayev for Tsar, and with regard to the marriage situation, the mitzvah of marriage. In the case of an ones, he's absolutely chayiv in marriage. Shoser basiso, whether he likes it or not, batsito, whatever he gets, that's what he has to be married to. He's not allowed to divorce her. In the case of the mafata, he can decide whether he wants to marry her or not.
Presumably, if she wants a divorce afterwards, he can. I assume, yeah.
In the case of Ones, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we found the case of Isha Re'uyalo, that the mitzvah of Lo Si'al Isha only applies if she's Muteres Lo, but if she's Asuras Lo, then there's no mitzvah. So the Gemara begins to analyze the first distinction between Ones and Mefata, and that's Tsar. Tsar Demai. What tsar are we talking about? The Gemara is going to have a few possibilities. Omar Avud Shmuel tsar she chavota al gabi karka, that he throws her down onto the ground, and only in the case of ones does that happen, and in the case of mefuta, that doesn't happen because she's not resisting. Maskifla, Rav Zeri doesn't like this pshat, because Elamiata Chavot al Gabi Shirayim Hochenami Depotur, who says that he threw her down onto ground, maybe he threw her down onto something soft. So Vachite Machinami. Now we turn to let's just finish up on Lamed Tes Samin Aleph, and then we'll turn to Lamed Tes Samin Beis. And if you'll say, Nochinami, the Chiyuv of Tsar is dependent upon whether there was a Chavota this way or Chavota that way, was it Gal Gabi Karkal Gabi, Agabi Shirayim, Barsanya, but we have a Brisa, and this Brisa is attached to our Mishnah, and it says that an Ones pays Tsar. And the Bryce is going to quote a dissenting opinion, and we're going to prove from this Bryce that the tsar that we're dealing with is not chavot al gabi karka, because the Bryce says Reb Shimon Yehuda mirvishum Reb Shimon ha'ones eino mishalim esat tsar, and here the Gemara Amid Beis says mitnei shesofa. This is the unique sheet of Rabbi Shimon, that since ultimately she's going to suffer this same exact tsar when she gets married, therefore there's no chiyuv at all. And as if you're talking about some tsar that instead of her having the tsar later on in life, she's going to have it now through the Maisa Ones, then you can understand and justify Rabbi Shimon exempting the Ones from tsar. But if we're talking about Chavot al Gabi Karka, I mean, there's no way you could say that eventually she's going to suffer that tsar. That's not what her husband is going to do. If he does that, we'll get rid of him real quick. Amulo, the Chachamim say, Eina dominiv elis biones, lidiv elis berotzo. Knows whatever that tsar is going to be in the future, and the Chachamim not denying that she will have that tsar tachas bailo, but it's not going to be the same profound tsar that she suffers in the ones situation. But in any event, we see simply that Reb Shimon is talking about sofel et tsar tachas bailo. It couldn't be that he's talking about chavot al gabi kar. El Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabba Baravua, the Tsar of Ones is a Tsar Shal Pisuk Haraglayim. In other words, when he has the bia, in the case of an ones, when he forces her, he spreads her legs apart in such a way that she suffers a certain tsar. And again, this is before she has any anos tashmish. So at this point, all she has is pure tsar. And Rav Nachman wants to prove this from a pasuk in Yechezkel. It says, "V'cheinu Omer." Now, this pasuk is using a mashal in order to rebuke Klal Yisrael, and the mashal is that we are not living up to our dedication, our commitment to Hashem, and instead we're like he compares us to a loose woman, a harlot who has znus with many, many different men. So too, instead of worshiping one God and being dedicated to one man, in the Nimshal, we are moving from one God to another God and we're guilty of Avodah Zarah. That's the accusation here of the Navi. But the Navi wants to add that a Zona who has relations with so many different men, then she's doing so despite the fact that there's a certain element of tsar. And that tsar is called pisuk raglayim. Now, it makes sense that Rabbi Shimon would say that sofel it's tar tachas baila, because pisuk raglayim is going to be something that's going to happen even when she has a legitimate relationship, a consenting relationship with her husband. So therefore, this tsar is not a unique tsar that the Ma'anes causes. And the Chacham can again counter by saying, well, the Pisuk Raglayim, when she consents and she's part of the action, is that that's not the same as Pisuk Yadayim when she's victimized against her will. In any event, the Hochacha, the proof that the Gemara is attesting to from this Pasuk, is that there is some tsar to Pisuk Raglayim, and that's what the Navi is castigating the Jewish people. That they are like a zona, and in their worship of idols, and in their violation of idolatry, they're like the zona, that the zona is so committed to her cause, you know, to her ultimate agenda, that she's even not choshish for the tsar of Pisuk Yadayim Raglayim, even though there's a certain tsar. She's mezana mikol over v'derek. So the zona situation is one that has tsar in it, and yet she goes for it. So too, the people of Israel are interested in idolatry. They're like a zona, and despite some sort of element of tsar, because, you know, idolatry sometimes demands a very high price, a very high sacrifice, but nevertheless, that's their agenda. They want to worship idols. Now, I think I mentioned when we learned this the first round that there's a tshuva of the Chacham Tzvi that puts this whole sugya into a different perspective. He claims that the tsar of Pisuk Raglayim is only Bebir Rishona. And again, exactly how he goes through this entire sugya and puts all the pieces of the puzzle together, I don't know. For that, we'd have to go through the tshuva of the Chacham Tzvi. But we understand now what it means in the Chachamim's counter-argument against Reb Shimon that Sofel it's Tar Tachas Baila, because if this is a unique tsar of Be'ila Rishona, the Pisuk Raglayim of Be'ila Rishona, then she's going to suffer that tsar ultimately, inevitably, in any event, under her husband. But if, on the other hand, we're talking about the tsar of Pisuk Yadayim Raglayim Pisuk Raglayim in the case of a Zona, one time after the other, and it's not unique to Bir Rishona, then it's a little bit difficult to understand what the Chacham are counter-arguing to Reb Shimon and saying, Sofel it's Tar Tachas Baila. Here the Chacham Tzvi has one up on us, because Sofel it's Tar Tachas Baila means that unique tsar of Be'ila Rishona. If this is a tsar that's involved in every single Bia, which seems to be indicated in the pashtus of the sugi without the Chacham Tzvi, and that's the Moshel of the Zona, then she's always, every single beer is going to cause that tzar. And if that be the case, what does he mean, sofel it's tzar? That's a different tzar. There's this tzar and that tzar. The ones is certainly generating this tzar. So what's the sofel it's tzar tachas baila? Okay, Ihochi, the Gemara asks the following question. If the tzar is pisuk raglayim, is mefuta nami? Just one second, I may have mistakenly confused the sheet this year. I don't know, let me just go over it one more time just in case I have to correct myself. I may have, you know, we don't have time to listen to the recording here, but what I meant to say is that Rabbi Shimon is the one who says Sofel it's Tayar Tachas Baila. I think mistakenly I may have said that the Chachomim say Sofel it's Tayar Tachas Baila. So Rabbi Shimon is saying, well, this doesn't justify the Chiv Ones to pay for tzar, if it's anyway soful, it's tzar tachas bayil. And again, that makes sense according to the Chacham Tzvi that it's bir rishona. It's very difficult to understand Rav Shimon's argument of soful, it's tzar tachas bayil, if we're talking about a tzar that is engendered every single time she has bir. Now we have another difficulty here, because the Gemara says that there's pisuk reglayim even in the case of mafuta. So why does the Mishnah say that the Mefuta, in the case of Mefuta, the Mefata is potter from Tsar, he should have to pay Tsar even though she consented, but she did suffer this Tsar. And that's certainly true according to the Chacham Tzvi, because we're talking about a Besula, so it's Bia Rishona, or according to the other Pshat, the simple straightforward Pshat, that in every Bia she has this Tsar. Of course, you can always ask the following question. Why does Gemara think that the Mefata should have to pay Tsar if she agreed in any event to have this bia? So what is Gemara saying here? Ihochi Mefuta Nami. Why does the Gemara is objecting. Why does the Mishnah say that the Mefata is potter from Tsar if she suffers this Tsar even in the case of Mefata? Well, the answer to that should be a simple answer, because she consented to have this, and that's exactly what the Gemara is going to say now. Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rabba Bar Avua, the reason why in the case of Mefata there's no payment for Tsar is the answer is because she consented and she therefore has a mechila on the Tsar. Mashal, he gives a marshal, he says, Mefuta Lamadavadomeli Adam Shamal Khaver Krashi Raim Shalibi Pata. So if I tell you to be mazik me and you'll be pata, that's a machila. So we understand very well why in the case of Ones he's chayav for tzar, in the case of Mefuta he's not chayav for tzar, because in the case of Mefuta there's machila, in the case of Ones there's no machila. We're not exactly sure what the tzar is in the case of Ones. It's certainly not chavata Al Gabi Karka, because then the concept of Sofel it's Tzar Tachas Baila makes no sense, but it could be Tzar of Pisuk Reglayim if we assume, like the Chacham Tzvi, that Tzar is unique to the first Bia. Then we understand why the Chacham say Yechayev Tzar in the case of Ones, and Rav Shimon says for some reason Sofel it's Tzar Tachas Baila. But again, according to the Chacham Tzvi, we have to understand what that means. But if we go like the Chachamim, it means that every single bia is going to generate that tzar of pisuk reglayim. The Gemara now asks a question: can you really compare mafuta to the case of krash irayim shalit? In the case of mafuta, the knas goes to her father, and not only the knas, but the nezek and the Tsar and the boshes, all that is in the bailus of the father, diavu and ninu. So how does the mechila of the mefuta operate against the best interests of her father, who's now in the driver's seat? He's the bailum, he has the schusk to collect this money. How could she be mochel? I could be mochel on my shirayim, but I can't be mochel on your shirayim.
But the problem is that we're talking about physical tsar here, and that's hers and hers alone. The pagam, he suffers a monetary loss. The boshet, it's a busha for the entire family. But the tsar is hers alone. He might get get right. the money, but if she doesn't have tzar, there's nothing for him to collect.
Oh, but right now, you're a step ahead of me, because okay. right now the Gemara is assuming she does have tzar. Right, because the Gemara is saying Yihochi Mefuta Nami means that that tzar Pisuk Raglayim is something that is endured, is experienced even by a Mefuta. So Gemara says, well, in the case of Mefuta is Mechil. That doesn't make any sense. She doesn't have the rights to be Mochel on the payment of tzar. El Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav Barvuah. This is your answer, I believe. Pikchos Shebahem Omros. The women who are sensitive and they're clever, they say Mefuta Ein Lo Tzar. She doesn't feel the Pisuk Raglayim. That she's involved in this Hanoas Tashmish, and it barely registers. It's such a subtle kind of tzar, and within the greater context of Bia, which she consented to, she doesn't feel that tzar. So now the fundamental difference between Ones and Mefata is not between Mechila and No Mechila, because Mechila would not be valid, would not be operative in the case of a Nara, but the difference is whether she experiences this tzar or not. So the Gemara asks the following question, with all due respect to the Nashim, Pikchos, but Vahaka Chazino de Isle, we see in front of our eyes, the biology tells us that she does endure the suffering of tzar Pisuk Raglayim. Rabbi tries to clarify or embellish this idea that in the case of Mefuta, there's no chiyuv tzar. Amra li aim. Now, when Navai says aim, he was born without a mother, so aim means omenis. Omenis means the nursemaid that raised Abaye. And she made a comment about the tzar of Pisuk Raglayim. And she said, it's kemayo chamime al reishi dekarcha. It's like pouring hot water on the head of a kereach. Kereach is someone who's bald. So he says the following, that in such a case, a person who's bald doesn't suffer from the warm water. Again, it's not burning hot water, it's warm water. But on the other hand, on the contrary, he feels a sense of pleasure, because warm water on the skin is pleasurable. So in the case of a futa, there is a conflict here between the two contradictory feelings that she has. She has hanos tashmish, and on the other hand, she has the tzar of Pisuk Raglayim, so the hanos tashmish overrides, so to speak, or trumps the tzar of Pisuk Raglayim. Rava Amar, Rava says, again coming to the same conclusion as Abai, but he was taught it in a slightly different formulation, Omra li basra of Chizda, and that's his wife. Rava married the daughter of Rav Chizda, and what she said about tzar Pisuk Raglayim was the key rivda de kusilsa. It's like the tsar of taking a pin and pushing it into a vein in order to bring dam out of the vein. Like if you've ever gone for a blood test, so they prick you with a needle. That doesn't feel so painful. And here too, in the case of Pisuk Raglayim, because it's part of the Hanas Tashmish, it's just a second, you know, for a split second, it's not a tzar that registers. Omar Rapop Amar Omarli Bas Abba Surah. Again, he's talking about his wife. He was married to the daughter of someone by the name of Abba, who came from the town of Surah. And what she said about tzar Pisuk Raglayim is ki nama akusha b'chinche. It's like the tzar that you feel if you take hard bread and you chew it. So it's go. He says here in Hebrew gorer esachech, that it has some sort of a rubbing effect on the throat. But you know, while you're eating it and you're swallowing it and you're hungry, you don't feel that slight amount of tzar. So that's in the case of Mefuta.
In all three cases, we're talking about not a whole lot of tzar, which can easily be
neutralized or overwhelmed by the general framework of
Hanukkah. Okay, but now the conclusion here is that the tzar is the Pisuk Raglayim.
Yes.
For some reason, I was thinking it was the breaking of the hymen.
Well, then I think, if I'm not mistaken, everybody would agree to the argument of Rav Shimon of Sofa Litztara Tachas Baila.
Now, the other thing is, though, according to the Chacham Tzvi, there's only Tzar with a Betula.
Correct. It's only the first... Oh, I'm not 100% sure that that's... Well, what do you mean by a Betula? I mean the first Bia. I don't know if she's a Betula. Like, she could have been a Mukas Eitz or a Bulgaris or something.
But when you use the word Betula,
you don't mean the legal category of Betula. You mean a woman who never had a relationship with a man. Yeah, that's the Chacham.
People got AIDS, but the first Pisuk Ruglayim would still hurt.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure.
Okay,
but AIDS has to do with the Pisuk.
Basically, there's Tzar only the first time, according to this. Hmm. Someone writes from my room at Chasr Shalom, and he doesn't pay Tzar.
Right.
Okay. Would the psychological trauma that women suffer, would that be under bullshit, maybe?
Probably.
Okay.
Probably.
Thank you.
Ha'ones nosen miyad v'amafatel shiyotzi. Now, if you read this Mishnah literally, as we pointed out yesterday, you come to some very strange conclusion, because l'chayotzi implies when he divorces her. And it doesn't make any sense that the mafata is going to pay a knas when he divorces her. So the Gemara asks, that's not when a mafata pays a knas. A mafata pays a knas if he doesn't marry her. L'chayotzi, after he divorces her? Ishtohi. In other words, if you're going to tell me that he pays a knas when he divorces her, you're implying that he already married her. But that's not the case of mafata. Mafata is a case where he didn't marry her yet, and as a result of the pitu, he has to pay a knas. What are you telling me? He pays a knas when he divorces her. Who's talking about divorce over here? We're talking about a man who's obligated, if he so chooses to. I shouldn't say obligated, maybe, because we're talking about a mafata. But he has to pay the knas. He's not going to marry her. If he marries her, he doesn't pay the knas. But we're not talking about a case where he married her, because we're talking about a case where he's paying the knas, which means that he didn't marry her. So why are you talking about divorce? You can't talk about divorce unless he married her, but he didn't marry her. Amar Abaye, Emo l'chshelo yichnos. We have to reinterpret the language of the Mishnah, the choice of the word l'chshiyotzi. That word should not be interpreted literally as when he divorces her, but rather when he decides that he's not marrying her. So he has two choices. He can either marry her and then he's parted from knas, or he can decide he's not going to marry her and he pays the knas. And that's what it says in the pasuk. I'll read to you the pasuk. It says, "Ima'ein yima'ein avil l'sitolo, l'sitolo, kesef yishkol kemor absulos." Meaning the chiyuv is when he doesn't marry her. We have it explicitly in a brayse. Apo pisha omru amafate nose, meaning the mafate pays knas. Lichshelo yichnos. That's because he decided that he wouldn't marry her. So the knas itself, in the case of mafate, is conditional on the fact that he decides not to marry her. But boshes supagam nose miyat. With regard to boshes supagam, he would have to pay those payments, those compensation penalties, whether or not he decides to marry her. So with regard to Kesef Yishkol Kevar Psulos, with regard to the Knas, the Torah says it's conditional on the fact that he doesn't marry her. With regard to Boshes Pagam, those payments are automatic. They're not conditional. They're absolute. And you'll ask me, but she was Mocheles. I mean, after all, we're talking about a Mefuta. But the answer is she can't be Mocheles, since it's the father who has the rights to collect this money. So the Braisa continues, and it says, V'echad ha'ones, V'echad ha'mefate, Bein hi uvein avio, Yecholim li'akev. So the Braisa says the following, that Lomi boy, it goes without saying in the case of Mafata, that's Pshita, that everything depends upon the approval, in this case, of both the father and the daughter. And then the marriage will go through. In the case of Ones, it's a little bit more complicated, because since the Torah commands him to marry her, how do we know that she has rights to, you know, to veto the marriage? So the Gemara analyzed that. Bishlim of Mafuta, I understand that in the case of Mafuta, she has a right to veto the marriage. Why? Because of a special drasha. Ksiv, it says in Mafuta, Imma'ein Yima'ein Aviha. So there's a double language here, Ma'ein Yima'ein. Ainli Ela Aviha. If you read the Pasuk Kipshuto, it seems that the father has rights to veto the marriage, and that's exclusive to the father. But he acts ma'vinayin tamalomer yima'ein mikol makom. In other words, the double language of ma'ein yima'ein is coming to include the daughter's rights for miyun meaning for protest and veto. Ela ones bishleima ihi ksiv velo siya, and then it says liisha and velo siyes. The word siyes in reference to the Isha herself, and it means midat, or siyes, when you have a das makadesh. So the pasuk clearly makes the marriage contingent on the part that on the condition that she has das, that she agrees and approves to this marriage. El avia minayin minolan. How do we know that even the father has veto rights? On Rabaye shelo yechote niskar, that this premise, this halachic principle, is based on svara. It's not based on any pasuk. What is the svara? We have a principle called lo yechote niskar, which means that the chote should not gain, he should not benefit through his sin. In other words, let's compare the situation before his sin to a situation after he sinned. If he hadn't raped her, then he would not be able to marry her without the veto power of the father. Now, as a result of rape, he could marry her against the will of the father. That means that, you know, crime pays. Rava, my kabbal chomer. Rava says that the logic that compels us to conclude that the father also likewise has veto power is based on a kabbal chomer. Ma mefata shelo avar el al das avia bilvad. Which means the following. In the case of Mafata, the only one whose will was violated was that of the father, because she herself consented to have this bia. And therefore the Mafata, as we'll see in comparison to the Ones, is a lower echelon sin. That's in the case of Mafata. Now I'm going to skip a few words, but ones she'avar al das avia v'al das atzma. But certainly, if you put ones on the Richter scale and you compare it to mefat in terms of the profound nature of the sin, then ones is that much more of an intense sin, an intense violation, because not only does he violate the das of the father, but he violates the das of the isha. She was a complete victim of rape. So let's go back now. In the case of Mafata, which is a lower echelon sin, she herself consented, is nevertheless, the Torah says, Bein hi u bein avi yichol liakev, that both she and her father have rights to veto the marriage. His ones, which is a more severe violation, is lo kolshkin. How much more so should the father be granted rights to veto the marriage? So now the Gemara wants to analyze. Why is that Rava did not accept Abaye, and vice versa? Rava, lo omar ka Abaye, came into kamashalim, lav chote niskarhu. Rava says we have to take a look at the picture on the whole. You're saying the crime pays because now he's going to be able to marry her after the rape against the will of the father, which was not so before he raped her. Well, guess what? He's going to have to pay big bucks for that. So that's not something that would motivate a person to do a sin. You know, in the overall picture, it doesn't make sense that sin, crime pays here, because crime is going to cause him to pay. He's going to have to pay a hefty sum of money. Again, Abai is not compelled by this argument. He's not impressed by this, because Abai says that at the end of the day, if he really, really wanted to marry this woman, and the father is giving him a headache about it, you know, the father is protesting, which we know, especially in young people, this is very, very common, that the father puts his foot down. He says, absolutely not. So he went ahead and he raped her. So he accomplished his goal, because now the father has no... again, I don't know that she's going to agree to marry him. So he's still spinning what's it called, that wheel?
Roulette wheel.
The roulette wheel, right. But at least he got rid of the father. He's out of the picture now. So that's a chote niskar. And basically Abai says is that once you give one element of chote niskar, even though he'll have to pay for it, he still becomes a chote niskar if you knock the father out of the box. Abai lo amar kiv rava. L'chora, rava's kamachomer is ironclad. What pircha, what hole did he find in this, the punching bag in this kalvachomer? So the Gemara answers, Mefate de iu motzi mi'akev, is therefore a vio nami motzi mi'akev. The reason why in the case of Mefate the father has veto power is because she has veto power. But ones de iu lo motzi mi'akev. Oh, so it's interesting here, because the Gemara is introducing a very important, Abai is introducing a very important variable into the equation. And that is, what is the status of the Mefata and the Ones as far as veto power is concerned? In other words, were they given the free choice to decide whether to marry this girl? Well, in the case of Mefata, Iu Motzi Miakev. The Mefata himself is not compelled, he's not mandated to marry her. So he can say, I don't want to marry her. So the Torah gave him, in the case of Mefata, a right of veto. So we know that the veto power to block this marriage in the case of Mefata is a very broad scoped veto power. And it turns out that she has veto power, and the father has veto power, and he himself, the Mefata, has veto power. But how do we know anything about the case of Ones? Because in the case of Ones, the only one who we know has veto power, and that was based on the pasuk of Lo Seal Leisha Midata, is her, the Nara, herself. So now you want to expand the scope. Well, in the case of Ones, he himself, the Ma'anis, has no veto power. He's forced and compelled by law to marry her. And therefore, maybe the father also has no veto power. So your Kalvachomer really falls by the wayside. That's the pirch of the Kalvachomer, and it falls through. And again, you have to ask yourself the following question. I mean, why is it that the Gemara has a hava mina that a via lo motzi mi'akev? I mean, after all, he has rights to marry her off. She's a Nara. Shouldn't he have rights to choose, you know, whichever marriage partner, or to exclude whichever marriage partner he's not interested in? It's kind of paradoxical. But I think the answer is that since in this particular case there's a mitzvah of a lo seal leisha, in fact, the Gemara later on, now we can say it on this round because we already finished the parak, the Gemara's even raised the possibility that if, let's say, he rapes a mamzeres and the Torah says he's not allowed to marry her, but maybe he would marry her because of esse dochalosasa. So there is a power here to the essay, and maybe the father's veto power is completely null and void because of the mitzvah of a lo seal leisha. And the Gemara has to prove, either based on the svar of lo yei chote niskar or based on Rav's kalvachomer, that indeed the father has veto power. So the lo seal leisha is a mitzvah which is conditional on the father's approval. Now the Gemara brings a brisa with regard to Ones, and the question is whether he pays the ksuba with gerushin or not. Tanya idach, we have another brisa. Afal pisha omro Ones nosein miyad. In other words, regardless of the fact that he's going to marry her and he has to marry her, he still pays the knas. Kishiyotzehu, when he divorces her, ain't lo all of klu. He doesn't have to pay for the ksuba. Now, it's logically, we would have said that the knas, which he pays, the manis, to the father, and she, the Nara herself, gets nothing, not a single penny. So now let her, with the divorce, let her get the ksuba at least. Correct? Kamashbalon, this price is dropping a bomb over here, that the knas itself is a replacement for the ksuba. And in this case, there was no takanas ksuba. Now, some of the mafarshim want to suggest that the reason why there's no takanas ksuba is because the whole purpose of takanas ksuba is to inhibit him from divorcing his wife. And in this case, he doesn't have rights halachically to divorce his wife. So there was no takanas ksuba. But the bottom line is that the mechanics of this halacha formulated by the Braisa is that the ksuba is replaced by what? By the knas. So the Gemara asks about the Braisa, the Lashon HaBraisa. It says here, kishe yotzi. What does that mean, kishe yotzi? It sounds like he's deciding to divorce her. And the question is, does he have to pay the ksuba? In fact, the Gemara, mi matzi mapikla. The Torah says, lo yuchel shalcha kol yomav. This whole entity, this whole scenario that he's divorcing her, he's paying the ksuba, l'chor is a non-entity. Ema, but you rather have to change it a little bit in the Braisa, kishe teitzei hi, if she decides that she wants gerushin. So if she demands a get, she doesn't get ksuba. Why ein lo a love klum? Because, as we said before, the knas replaces the ksuba. Now the Gemara quotes the end of this Braisa, the same Braisa. The Braisa says meis. What happens if the ma'anes dies after the marriage? Is according to the Tanakhama, yotza kesef knasa biksubasa. Again, as we said before, the payment of the knas replaces the ksuba. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, yeshla ksuba mana. Again, she can't get a masai because she's a bu'ula, but she can get a ksuba asmana. And you're wondering out loud, Why Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda only appears here in the Seifa, in the Reisha? We said that Kishiyotzi ein la klum. So it could be Kishiyotzi ein la klum, according to Rabbi Yossi, you have to give it a different twist. It's not because the knas is an automatic replacement of the ksuba, but because she was the one who insisted that he divorce her. Maybe in that case, there is no ksuba. Or some alternative shot. But where does Rabbi Yehuda disagree? And he says, no, there's no din that the knas replaced the ksuba in the case of Mace, where the ma'anes died. I mean, there, you know, she's not in any way responsible to give up her rights. He died. So she has rights to the ksuba. And Rabbi Yossi is not going to accept this principle that the knas replaced the ksuba. So the Gemara analyzes. But Micah, mythically, what is this machlokas all about? And the Gemara says the following: Rabbanan Savri Taima my Tiknu Takinu Rabbanan Ksuba Kadesh Lotehe Kalabin of Lotzia Veholo Matzi Mapikla. The reason why in this case there's no Ksuba is because Rabbanan didn't institute a Ksuba. Now we're holding, according to that Mandiyoma, which is a Sugya in the first parak of Ksuba, is that Ksuba, the whole entity of Ksuba, is the Rabbanan. It's the Takanas Chachamim. Now, what motivated the Chachamim to institute this monetary payment of a ksuba? The answer is to inhibit him from divorcing her. Well, in this case, there's no need to inhibit him because
he can't
divorce her in any way. So Tosfos has a problem in Divrei Maskil Taima because he doesn't understand how that, you know, how that applies in the case of mess. You know, I understand if he's coming to divorce us, you're going to say, well, he's got to pay the ksuba, and that's going to inhibit him from divorcing her. But the law of ksuba is that there's a ksuba even if he dies. Now, that doesn't seem to have anything to do with inhibiting him. You know, never if the guy died. So Tosfos answers that once they were masakin the ksuba for the case of a grusha, they already were masakin even in the case where he dies, where he didn't divorce her. And that has to do with a concept called chen, kedeshi, balein yimtzu chen beinehem. That the ksuba somehow, you know, it enhances, it upgrades her status on the shidduch market. Again, reviewing the sheet of the Chachamim, they argue that there's no takanas ksuba in a case of ones because he is obligated to remain married. He doesn't have the option of divorcing. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Savar, let's be misaki neksuba. And even though he doesn't have, in the case of onus, the possibility of being megarish shahanami mitzayer la, he can find a way of ultimately divorcing her. He'll cause her all sorts of anguish ad the omer until finally she say, die, you know, it's enough, I can't tolerate it anymore. Is lo v'inaloch, I don't want to remain in this marriage. So she's gonna virtually he's going to divorce her. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna say, look, man, if you force her to demand I want out of this marriage, you're gonna have to pay the ksuba. But that's the shita of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. Now, getting back to the Mishnah again, the Mishnah says the difference between anusa mefuta is her onus shoseh batzitzo. He's obligated to marry her, even if she's very badly blemished. Amalei Rava miparzekaya le Rav michti migmar gomir mehadadi. We have a hekesh, or let's call it gzeir shava to be more precise about it, between onus and mefata. And we compare the dinim, that's how we derive chamishim kesef, and it's got to be shkolim from both here to there. And now we return to daf mem amud aleph. Is laha milsa nami ligmu me'adad? Why don't we derive from ones to mafata? Just like in ones, he has to marry her whether he wants to or not. He's forced by law to marry her. So too in the case of mafata or makrova, the Torah says a mafata mahar yimharenu lo leisha. And what does it mean yimharenu lo? The word lo here, the extra word lo, is kind of teaching me dato. Lo means he wanted to marry her. It was his decision and his he approved. So once he has a ratzon, it's midato, then he marries her. But we're not going to be kofa him, we're not going to force him to marry her. Now there's machlokas here between Tosfos and the Ritva, which I'm not getting into. Exactly how this drasha works, is it derived from the word yimharena? Is it derived from the word lo? Is it derived? There's another possibility of tihiya. I mean, there's so many different possibilities here. But the bottom line is, if a fata, he has to decide that he wants to marry her. No one can compel him to marry. Ketzad shoseh batzitzo. And then the Mishnah continues by saying, Nimtzabav dover erva. Oh, Einor u'yu lovo b'Yisrael. Is Einor ashoy l'kaima omer av kahana risol shmaita kami derav zvid minar doi. When I presented this Mishnah to Rav Zvid, and the Mishnah says that if she's ain't a Re'uya Lobo B'Yisrael, he's not allowed to marry her. I asked him the following question. What about Nesei Esei V'nit Chelosasei? What are you telling me? An Ones can't marry her because she's ain't a Re'uya Lobo and is a Lotasei. But what about Esei Docha Lotasei? We have a principle that we derive from Mila Bitsaras, which we'll get to in just a second, that essay is Dochalosis. So why don't we apply that here? On Ali, so Rav Zvid responded, hey Chamrina, when do we apply the principle of Nesei Essay Venit Chalosis? That's Kigon Mila Bitsaras. So what's Mila Bitsaras? The Torah says, Yishomer Venegat Saras Lishmar Mi'od. And the Chachamim in the end of Masech Demak is derived from this pasuk that this Hishamer is a lashon of a lotaseh. It's a lotaseh for ktsitas baheres. Baheres is a pathological, dermatological phenomenon which is identified by the Kohen as being a neged tzaras. And if she manifests this baheres, well, in this case, actually, it's a man who has this baheres, then the law is that the Kohen has to be mitayer the baheres, but we can't cut it out. You know, surgical operation is not allowed. Now, if it turns out, but it's a freaky case, that this baheres happens to be b'moko mila on the orla itself, so then we're in a bind, we're in a collision, because on the one hand, the mitzvah is to cut the orla, on the other hand, the Torah prohibits you from cutting out baheres. There's no way you can cut out the orla without cutting out the baheres. So in this case, for the sake of the mitzvah of cutting the orla, the Torah steps aside and says you're allowed to cut off the baheres. That's called esse dofelosasa. But notice that in this case of tzitzas baheres b'tzaras, there's an absolute irreconcilable conflict here between the esse and the losa. You can't have both. That's called in the Lashon Hashaslo, Efshel Kiyumei Liesei. There's no way you can fulfill Liesei without violating the law. So there's a head-on collision, the Efshel Kaim Shnei. And since the essay is an essay which doesn't allow you to in any way be potter from the essay, there's no way out of this essay, Yechayev Emila, is therefore the Kiyum essay is going to override the Los Asa. Aval Hocha, but here in the case of Ones, we don't necessarily have to fulfill this essay and therefore violate the Los Asa of whatever she is, of Amzeris, whatever the case may be. Why? She has a right to say, I don't want to marry this guy. And then there's no essay at all. So it's not like the case of Mila Bitzaras, where there's automatically going to be a Mila, and that mitzvah is not conditional. We have a head-on collision, and it's irreconcilable between the essay and the losa. Here, we can have a cake and eat it. We don't have to violate the losa. So why? Because this essay can step aside. How do you get the essay to step aside? Thank you, essay, but please step aside. In Mila, we don't have that option. But here we have this option because the Torah says that she can say lo ba'ina. She can decide that she doesn't want to marry it.
So the court forces her to say she doesn't want to marry it.
So that's a gigantic machlokas rishonim. For that, you have to come to my Ian Shir at 11:45. And some rishonim say that... that in Okinawa, it really depends upon whether she says Lovin or not. Others say that since she could say Lovin, it's a different kind of an essay. And then we have the Tosi Yishonim here, which introduce a whole other element to the equation, and that is that he will violate the losasa because of essay docha losasa, but she doesn't have to violate the losasa because she could say she doesn't want to marry him. So there's no essay docha losasa with regard to her. I'll just read to you the language of the Tosi Shani. He says, "Hacha gabi di da leka asay daha ibai amar lo biinale." So she says she doesn't want to marry him. There's no essay. Hilkach ela lav or belav mishum essay didei. In other words, it's going to turn out that if she says she doesn't want to marry him, she therefore exempts herself of the essay. He's chayv in the essay. So what are we going to do? We're going to allow him to violate the losa because of his essay. But what about her? She doesn't have the essay. And yet, as far as the losa is concerned, he musheres kemosa v'hishva kosav ishal leish. That's a sugim pei and yivamas. So you can't say essay tochalosas as far as she's concerned because she doesn't have the essay. He has the essay, but she doesn't. That leads us to the next Mishnah.
I do have to rush today.
Oh, so I don't want to hold you up. I'll just make a note here.
Okay,
thank you so
very
much.
Good.
Okay, great.
Have a good day.
You too. Have a great day.
And John, thanks for
So, believe me, we're going to have... we're going to have a new Mishnah here. That's I think that's going to really project us towards. Well, we have two Mishnayos, three. I know we still have three Mishnayos. Okay, fine. But we're moving towards
the. You'll get it.